Could we stimulate ourselves into another kind of credit freeze?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiotakis. When a government sells bonds, it's essentially borrowing so it can spend money it doesn't have. So far, that's been one of the ways the U.S. government has been pumping up the balance sheet that's covering all those incredibly expensive economic rescue programs. But as we try to climb out of one financial hole, are we digging ourselves a new one? The British bond market just hit a showstopper that may be a sign of the risky consequences of ballooning stimulus spending. And as Christopher Worth reports, Britain's prime minister now appears to be backing away from his push for European leaders to boost their stimulus spending.
Gordon Brown might be heeding warnings from central bank officials in Europe and the UK, who have voiced their concerns this week over rising government debt. The British are already hoping to sell a record-breaking $200 billion worth of government bonds this year. Yesterday, a British government bond auction failed for the first time in 7 years, raising the question of whether investors might be worried as well. David Page of Investec says a series of failures in coming months would be cause for concern.
A lot of governments are borrowing aggressively across the world, and all of them will be very hopeful that various different buyers are there to back that up.
He says yesterday's failure is probably a one-time event, but Germany has also had trouble attracting enough investors for their government bonds in recent months. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Wall Street has opened higher thanks to reports on economic growth and jobless claims that came in this morning roughly as forecast. The Dow is up 60 points, 0.75%. The Nasdaq's up 1.5%. The S&P 500 higher by 1%. President Obama will hold a virtual press conference on the economy later this morning, with the questions coming from the public. Since Tuesday, the White House website has been soliciting questions, and visitors have been able to pose their own or vote on which questions that have already been posted are most important for the president to answer. Our D.C. Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports the number of votes cast so far is approaching 3 million.
Regular folks have submitted tens of thousands of questions about jobs, health care, and homeownership for a web chat with the president. In an online video, he says he realizes many people are worried about their financial future.
That's why we're going to try something a little different. We're going to take advantage of the internet to bring all of you to the White House to talk about the economy.
The most popular questions include, what will the government do to make higher education more affordable? Or can you drop the penalty for early withdrawals from 401ks? Political blogger David Dayan says this online forum gives the public new access to people in power.
I've seen things that are completely off limits to the traditional media, like the legalization of marijuana was very high on the list.
Experts say the White House could end up soliciting people who post to these web chats as lobbyists for administration proposals. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
In the next couple of days, a government-appointed task force will announce its recommendations on how to save the U.S. auto industry. According to today's Wall Street Journal, those decisions could include more bailout money for GM and Chrysler if the two companies can restructure their operations. David Zoya is editorial director at Ward's Automotive Reports.
It's gone back and forth as to whether, you know, bankruptcy is the better option or restructuring outside of bankruptcy. And it would appear now that maybe they're really trying to avoid the bankruptcy route.
GM and Chrysler have asked for another $22 billion in government aid. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, March 26th at marketplace.org. In the past couple of years, the Federal Housing Administration has captured a huge chunk of the mortgage market. Today, FHA insurance guarantees one in every three mortgages in America. But as Marketplace's Steve Henn reports, the FHA's rapid growth poses some risks.
Until recently, South Florida TV sets blared unbelievable condo deals.
Zero down payment, zero closing costs.
And Great Country Mortgage promised to make buying a condo easy.
No credit, bad credit, no problem, guaranteed.
And the Federal Housing Administration guaranteed many of these loans.
FHA's business has exploded.
Brian Chappelle is a former FHA employee and now a consultant. He says last year, the Federal Housing Administration approved tens of thousands of new mortgage brokers. These brokers pay a $1,000 fee and agree to abide by the FHA's lending practices. Then the FHA insures the loans they create. That lets the brokers sell their loans to major banks, and if a homebuyer defaults, the FHA pays off the tab. In 2008, FHA insurance made more than 1.6 million new mortgages possible.
It has gone from roughly a 3% market share in 2006 to now it's probably more than a third of all loans made in America.
FHA loans are propping up what's left of the real estate market. But Gary Lasefield, a former mortgage fraud investigator, says the FHA's explosive growth has attracted many of the worst subprime lenders in America.
Matter of fact, several of these companies are banned from certain states, yet they've been able to go out and get their FHA approval so that they can continue to broker loans.
Remember Great Country? Nearly two-thirds of their loans defaulted in less than 2 years. This will cost the FHA millions. Lasefield says the agency isn't scrutinizing new lenders properly, and already the FHA's insurance reserves have taken a multi-billion dollar hit. Its default rate is rising.
Oh, I expect it to be off the charts.
FHA officials say they aggressively police fraud, have shut down Great Country, and are beefing up oversight. Still, lots of analysts say within a year, the FHA might need a multi-billion dollar bailout of its own. I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Art shows, concerts, and performances are more than something to do on a Friday night. They're also a multi-billion dollar industry. That's the message from members of the arts community to lawmakers today at a House hearing. From Washington, Daniel Carson has more.
People always seem willing to spend money to forget their troubles, but arts donations are drying up and thousands of groups are facing bankruptcy. John Lynch, CEO of Americans for the Arts, says lawmakers need to understand the loss.
I want them to know this treasure that helps kids, helps communities, helps the nation is at risk.
Lynch says the arts industry employs 6 million people and generates $166 billion a year in jobs, ticket sales, and tax revenue. Lynch says he's grateful that the National Endowment for the Arts is getting $50 million from the stimulus bill, but it's just a start.
$50 million is a tiny piece. They are in big trouble right now and need the help and the attention of the United States government, just like every other industry.
Lynch is pushing for $1 billion to help fire up the arts. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
For the past 30 years, the Families and Work Institute has surveyed Americans about how they juggle jobs and children. Today, the group released its most recent findings. Caitlin Carroll has more.
The survey finds fewer of today's parents are confined by traditional gender roles. Roughly a quarter of women in dual-income households make more than their spouses, an increase of 10% over the last decade. And they don't see children as an obstacle to their careers.
Typically what you've seen for as long as I've been looking at this research is that when women have children, things change. This is the first time we've seen that when women have children, things are not changing as much.
Ellen Galinsky is president of the Families and Work Institute. She says these days men are taking on more parenting duties, and an increasing number are feeling stretched between work and family. Take Matthew Fieldman. He's a charity fundraiser in Cleveland. He and his wife both work full-time and divvy up caring for their daughter, Eliana.
A lot of the evenings are rushed, rushing to pick Eliana up, rushing to get home, rushing to change, to eat, and to get out the door for my next meeting.
Fieldman says eventually he or his wife will have to cut back on hours at work as Eliana gets older. But it's still an open debate over which one it will be. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Something doesn't add up here. Officials in Los Angeles County say homelessness has doubled since last year, and today the number of people in the county who have no place to call home is 74,000. That leaves a serious math problem when there are only 12,000 shelter beds to go around. The solution may be a device called the EDAR, which stands for Everyone Deserves a Roof. By day, it's a heavy-duty shopping cart. By night, it transforms into a tent that can sleep two people. Rob Schmitz takes a look.
The idea for EDAR came to Hollywood producer Peter Samuelson on a bike ride last year. He noticed there were more homeless people than usual, and one of them gave him a tour of her makeshift home.
There, behind the bushes, was a large cardboard box, and it had been raining, and it was wet, and it was smelly, and it was disgusting, and this was her home.
Samuelson sponsored a competition to invent an alternative, and the winner came up with the EDAR. Selmia McGee zips open the canvas flap of her EDAR unit and peeks outside. Last night she slept on the floor of the chapel at an overcrowded homeless shelter on LA's Skid Row. The 7-foot-long tent is suspended inches off the cold ground by wheels. Its floor is a thin, firm mattress. Its ceiling, a beige waterproof canvas, is 4 feet tall.
And it has like these little windows that you can open up, right? And as you can just feel, the mattress is just, it's really nice.
After you sleep in it, the EDAR converts to a covered shopping cart where you can keep your belongings.
You just simply lift that up and it clicks.
McGee, her husband, two children, and two grandchildren have all been homeless since November, when her husband lost his job as a trucker. For her daughter, 11-year-old Kiyomi, the EDAR serves as a place to do homework, draw, and to escape from the routine at the shelter.
It's kind of like my own little room because I have my bed, and then I can put my stuff here, and then I have a window. It's like a room.
Outside the chapel, EDARs line the hallways. The shelter has just ordered close to 50 more of them at $500 each. It's searching for donations to cover the expenses. Samuelson is currently in talks with one city in Southern California to use vacant land for an EDAR encampment. He plans to give away 10,000 EDARs by the end of this year. In Los Angeles, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
You can see that shelter on wheels for yourself on our website. We've got a photo and more information on the EDAR at marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. Thanks for making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.